from Lena's face. I strained to reach out and take her hand, but only my finger trembled. I was powerless. I couldn't do anything but watch as she tumbled into a dark place, alone, just like in the dreams. And she's dark?
She's the darkest cast a living today.
Why didn't my uncle tell me? Or my grandma? They said she was dead. Why would they lie to me?
There's the truth, and then there's the truth. They aren't likely the same thing. I reckon they were trying to protect you. They still think they can. But the greats? They're not so sure. I didn't want to be the one to tell you, but Melchizedek's a stubborn one.
Why are you trying to help me? I thought you didn't like me.
Doesn't have anything to do with liking or not liking. She's coming for you, and you don't need any distractions.
Alma raised an eyebrow.
Man, I don't want anything to happen to my boy. This is bigger than you, bigger than the both of you.
What's bigger than both of us?
All of it. You and Ethan just aren't meant to be.
Lena looked confused. Alma was talking in riddles again.
What do you mean?
Alma jerked around as if someone behind her had tapped her on the shoulder.
What do you say, Aunt Delilah?
Alma turned to Lena.
We don't have much time left.
The pendulum on the clock began to move almost imperceptibly. The room began to come back to life. My dad's eyes started to blink slowly, so that it took seconds for his lashes to brush his cheeks.
You put that bracelet back on. You need all the help you can get.
Time snapped back into place. I blinked a few times, glancing around the room. My father was still staring at his potatoes. Aunt Mercy was still wrapping a biscuit in her napkin. I lifted my hands in front of my face, wiggling my fingers.
What the hell was that?
Ethan, wait!
Aunt Grace gasped. Alma was splitting her biscuits and filling them with ham. She looked up at me, caught off guard. It was obvious she hadn't intended for me to hear their little girl talk. She gave me the look, meaning, you keep your mouth shut, Ethan Waite.
Don't you use that kind of language at my table. You're not too old for me to wash your mouth out with a bar of soap. What do you think it is? Ham and biscuits, turkey and stuffing. Now I've been cooking all day, I expect you to eat.
I looked over at Lena. The smile was gone. She was staring at her plate.
Lena, Bina, come back to me. I won't let anything happen to you. You'll be okay.
But she was too far away. Lena didn't say a word the whole way home. When we got to Ravenwood, she yanked open the car door, slammed it behind her, and took off toward the house without a word. I almost didn't follow her in. My head was reeling. I couldn't imagine what Lena was feeling. It was bad enough to lose your mother, but even I couldn't guess what it would feel like to find out your mother wanted you dead. My mother was lost to me, but I wasn't lost. She had anchored me to Alma, my father, Link, Gatlin, before she left. I felt her in the streets, my house, the library, even the pantry. Lena had never had that. She was cut loose and coming unmoored, Alma would say, like the poor man's fairies on the swamp. I wanted to be her anchor. But right now, I didn't think anyone could. Lena stalked past Boo, who was sitting on the front veranda, not even panting, even though he had dutifully run behind our car the whole way home. He'd also sat in my front yard all through dinner. He seemed to like the sweet potatoes and little marshmallows, which I had chucked out the front door when Alma went into the kitchen for more gravy. I could hear her shouting from inside the house. I sighed, got out of the car, and sat down on the porch steps next to the dog. My head was already pounding, a sugar low.
Uncle Macon! Uncle Macon, wake up! The sun's down, I know you're not asleep in there!
I could hear Lena yelling from inside my head, too.
The sun's down. I know you're not asleep.
I was waiting for the day Lena was going to spring it on me and tell me the truth about Macon, like she told me the truth about herself. Whatever he was, he didn't seem like an ordinary caster, if there even was such a thing. The way he slept all day and just appeared and disappeared wherever he felt like it, you didn't need to be a genius to see where that was going. Still, I wasn't sure I wanted to go there today. Boo stared at me. I reached out my hand to pet him, and he twisted his head away as if to say, "We're good. Please don't touch me, boy." When we heard things start to break inside, Boo and I got up and followed the noise. Lena was banging on one of the doors upstairs. The house had reverted to what I suspected was Macon's preferred state, dilapidated antebellum finery. I was secretly relieved not to be standing in a castle. I wished I could stop time and go back 3 hours. To be honest, I would have been perfectly happy if Lena's house had transformed into a double-wide trailer, and we were all sitting in front of a bowl of leftover stuffing, like the rest of Gatlin.
My mother? My own mother?
The door flung open. Macon stood there in the doorway, a disheveled mess. He was in rumpled linen pajamas, only what it really was, I hate to say, was more of a night dress. His eyes were redder than usual, and his skin whiter, his hair tousled. He looked like he had been run over by a Mack truck. In his own way, he wasn't all that different from my dad, a fine mess, maybe a finer mess. Except the nightdress. My dad wouldn't be caught dead in a dress.
My mother is Seraphine? That thing that tried to kill me on Halloween? How could you keep this from me?
Macon shook his head and rubbed his hand over his hair, annoyed.
Ah, Marie.
I would have paid anything to see Macon and Amma square off in a fight. My money would be on Amma. All the way. Macon stepped across his doorway, pulling the door shut behind him. I caught a glimpse of his bedroom. It looked like something out of Phantom of the Opera, with wrought iron candelabras standing taller than I was, and a black four-poster bed draped with gray and black velvet. The windows were draped with the same material, hanging sullenly over the black plantation shutters. Even the walls were upholstered in fraying black and gray fabric that was probably 100 years old. The room was pitch dark, dark as night. The effect was chilling. Darkness, real darkness, was something more than just a lack of light. As Macon stepped through the doorway, he emerged into the hall perfectly dressed. Not a hair out of place on his head, not a wrinkle in his slacks or crisp white shirt. Even the smooth buckskin shoes were without a scuff. He looked nothing like he had a moment before, and all he'd done was step through his own bedroom door. I looked at Lena. She hadn't even noticed, and I felt cold, remembering for a moment how different her life must have always been than mine.
My mother's alive?
I'm afraid it's a bit more complicated than that.
You mean the part about how my own mother wants to kill me? When were you going to tell me, Uncle Macon? When I was already claimed?
Please, don't start this again. You're not going dark.
Macon sighed.
I can't imagine how you can think otherwise, since I am the daughter of, and I quote, the darkest caster living today.
I understand you're upset. This is a lot to take in, and I should have told you myself. But you have to believe I was trying to protect you.
Lena was more than just angry now.
Protect me? You let me believe that Halloween was just some random attack, but it was my mother. My mother is alive, and she was trying to kill me, and you didn't think I should know about it?
We don't know that she's trying to kill you.
Picture frames started to bang against the walls. The bulbs in the fixtures lining the hallway shorted out, one by one, down the length of the hallway. The sound of rain pelted the shutters.
Haven't we had enough bad weather in the last few weeks?
What else have you been lying about? What am I going to find out next? That my father is alive, too?
I'm afraid not. He said it like it was a tragedy, something too sad to talk about. It was the same tone people used when they talked about my mother's death.
You have to help me.
Her voice was cracking.
I will do everything in my power to help you, Lena. I always have.
That's not true, she spat back at him. You haven't told me about my powers. You haven't taught me how to protect myself.
I don't know the scope of your powers. You're a natural. When you need to do something, you'll do it. In your own way, in your own time.
My own mother wants to kill me. I don't have any time.
As I said before, we don't know that she's trying to kill you.
Then how do you explain Halloween?
There are other possibilities. Del and I are trying to work that out.
Macon turned away from her, as if he was going to go back into his room.
You need to calm down. We can talk about this later.
Lena turned toward a vase, sitting on the credenza at the end of the hall. As if pulled by a string, the vase followed her eyes to the wall next to Macon's bedroom door, flying across the room and smashing against the plaster. It was far enough from Macon to be sure it wouldn't have hit him, but close enough to make a point. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't one of those times Lena had lost control and things just happened. She had done this on purpose. She was in control. Macon spun around so fast I didn't even see him move, but he was standing in front of Lena. He was as shocked as I was, and he had come to the same realization. It was no accident. And the look on her face told me she was just as surprised. He looked hurt. As hurt as Macon Ravenwood was capable of looking.
As I said, when you need to do something, you'll do it.
Macon turned to me.
It will be even more dangerous, I'm afraid, in the coming weeks. Things have changed. Don't leave her alone. When she is here, I can protect her. But my mother was right. It seems you can also protect her. Perhaps better than I can.
Hello, I can hear you.
Lena had recovered from her display of power and the look on Macon's face. I knew she'd torture herself over it later, but right now she was too angry to see that.
Don't talk about me like I'm not in the room.
A light bulb exploded behind him, and he didn't even flinch.
Are you listening to yourself? I need to know. I'm the one being hunted. I'm the one she wants. And I don't even know why.
They stared at each other. A Ravenwood and a Duquesne. Two branches of the same twisted castor tree. I wondered if this would be a good time for me to go. Macon looked at me. His face said yes. Lena looked at me. Hers said no. She grabbed me by the hand and I could feel the heat burning. She was on fire, as angry as I'd ever seen her. I couldn't believe every window in the house hadn't blown out.
You know why she's hunting me, don't you?
It's,
let me guess, complicated?
The two of them stared at each other. Lena's hair was curling. Macon was twisting his silver ring. Boo was backing away on his belly. Smart dog. I wished I could crawl out of the room, too. The last of the bulbs blew, and we were standing in the dark.
You have to tell me everything you know about my powers.
Those were her terms. Macon sighed, and the darkness began to dissipate.
Lena, it's not as if I don't want to tell you. After your little demonstration, it's clear that I don't even know what you're capable of. No one does. I suspect not even you.
She wasn't completely convinced, but she was listening.
That's what it means to be a natural. It's part of the gift.
She began to relax. The battle was over, and she had won it, for now.
Then what am I going to do?
Macon looked distressingly like my father when he came into my room when I was in fifth grade to explain the birds and the bees. Coming into your powers can be a very confusing time. Perhaps there is a book on the subject. If you like, we can go see Marion. Yeah, right. Choices and Changes, A Modern Girl's Guide to Casting. My Mom Wants to Kill Me, a self-help book for teens. It was going to be a long few weeks. November 28th. Domus Lunae Libri.
Today, but it's not a holiday. When I opened the front door, Marion was the last person I had expected to see, standing on my doorstep in her coat. Now I was sitting with Lena on the cold bench seat of Marion's old turquoise truck, on our way to the Castor Library.
A promise is a promise. It's the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday. It may not seem like a holiday, but it is a bank holiday, and that's all we need.
Marion was right. Amma had probably been in the line at the mall with a handful of coupons since before dawn. It was dark out now, and she still wasn't back. The Gatlin County Library is closed, so the Castor Library is open.
Same hours? I asked Marion as she turned onto Main.
She nodded.
9 to 6.
Then, winking,
9 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Not all my clientele can venture out in the daylight.
That hardly seems fair, complained Lena. The mortals get so much more time, and they don't even read around here.
Marion shrugged.
Like I said, I do get paid by Gatlin County. Take it up with them. But think how much longer you'll have until your Lunae Libri are due back.
I looked blank.
Lunae Libri, roughly translated Books of the Moon. You might call them Castor Scrolls.
I didn't care what you called them. I couldn't wait to see what the books in the Castor Library would tell us, or one book in particular, because we were short on two things, answers and time.
When we piled out of the truck, I couldn't believe where we were. Marion's truck was parked at the curb not 10 feet from the Gatlin Historical Society, or as my mom and Marion liked to say, the Gatlin Hysterical Society. The Historical Society was also the DAR headquarters. Marion had pulled her truck forward enough to avoid the puddle of light spilling down to the pavement from the lamppost. Boo Radley was sitting on the sidewalk, as if he had known.
Here? The Lunae whatever is at the DAR headquarters?
Domus Lunae Libri, the House of the Book of Moons. Lunae Libri for short. And no, just the Gatlin entrance.
I burst out laughing.
You have your mother's appreciation for irony.
We walked up to the deserted building. We couldn't have picked a better night.
But it's not a joke. The Historical Society is the oldest building in the county, next to Ravenwood itself. Nothing else survived the Great Burning, Marion added.
But the DAR and the Castors? How could they have anything in common? Lena was dumbfounded.
I expect you'll find they have quite a bit more in common than you think.
Marion hurried toward the old stone building, drawing out her familiar key ring.
I, for example, am a member of both societies.
I looked at Marion in disbelief.
I'm neutral. I thought I made myself perfectly clear. I'm not like you. You're like Lila. You get too involved.
I could finish that sentence for myself. And look what happened to her. Marion froze, but the words hung in the air. There was nothing she could say or do to take them back. I felt numb, but I didn't say anything. Lena reached for my hand, and I could feel her pulling me out of myself.
Ethan, are you okay?
Marion looked at her watch again.
It's 5 to 9. Technically, I shouldn't let you in yet, but I need to be downstairs by 9 in case we have any other visitors this evening. Follow me.
We made our way into the dark yard behind the building. She fumbled through her keys until she drew out what I had always thought was a keychain, because it didn't look like a key at all. It was an iron ring with one hinged side. With an expert hand, Marion twisted the hinge until it snapped back upon itself, turning the circle into a crescent, a caster moon. She pushed the key into what appeared to be an iron grating in the foundation at the back of the building. She twisted the key and the grating slid open. Behind the grating was a dark stone staircase leading down into even more darkness, the basement beneath the basement of the DAR. As she snapped the key one more rotation to the left, a row of torches lit themselves along the sides of the wall. Now the stairwell was fully illuminated with flickering light, and I could even see a glimpse of the words Domus Lunae Libri etched into the stone archway of the entrance below. Marion snapped the key once more, and the stairs disappeared, replaced by the iron grating once again.
"That's it? We aren't going to go in?"
Lena sounded annoyed. Marion stuck her hand through the grating. It was an illusion. "I can't cast, as you know, but something had to be done. Strays kept wandering in at night. Macon had Larkin rig it for me, and he stops by to keep it intact every now and then." Marion looked at us, suddenly somber. "All right, then. If you're sure this is what you want to do, I can't stop you, nor can I guide you in any way once you're downstairs. I can't prevent you from taking a book, or take one back from you before the Lunae Libri opens itself again." She put her hand on my shoulder. "Do you understand, Ethan? This isn't a game. There are powerful books down there, binding books, caster scrolls, dark and light talismans, objects of power. Things no mortal has ever seen except me and my predecessors. Many of the books are charmed, others are jinxed. You have to be careful. Touch nothing. Let Lena handle the books for you." Lena's hair was waving. She was already feeling the magic of this place. I nodded, wary. What I was feeling was less magical. My stomach churning like I was the one who drank too much peppermint schnapps. I wondered how often Mrs. Lincoln and her cronies had paced back and forth on the floor above us, oblivious to what was below them. "No matter what you find, remember, we have to be out before sunrise. 9 to 6, those are the library hours, and the entrance can only be made to open during that time. The sun will rise precisely at 6, it always does on a library day. If you aren't up the stairs by sunrise, you will be trapped until the next library day, and I have no way of knowing how well a mortal could survive that experience. Have I made myself perfectly clear?" Lena nodded, taking my hand. "Can we go in now? I can't wait." "I can't believe I'm doing this. Your Uncle Macon and Amma would kill me if they knew." Marion checked her watch. "After you." "Marion, have you... did my mother ever see this?" I couldn't let it go. I couldn't think about anything else. Marion looked at me, her eyes strangely sparkling. "Your mother was the person who gave me the job." And with that, she disappeared in front of us through the illusionary grating and down into the Lunae Libri below. Boo Radley barked, but it was too late to turn back now. The steps were cold and mossy, the air dank. Wet things, scurrying things, burrowing things. It wasn't hard to imagine them making themselves comfortable down here. I tried not to think about Marion's last words. I couldn't imagine my mother coming down these stairs. I couldn't imagine her knowing anything about this world I'd just stumbled onto. More like, this world that had stumbled onto me. But she had. And I couldn't stop wondering how. Had she stumbled onto it too, or had someone invited her in? Somehow it made it all seem more real, that my mother and I shared this secret, even if she wasn't here to share it with me. But I was the one here now,
walking down the stone steps, carved and flat like the floor of an old church. Along either side of the stairs I could see rough stone boulders, the foundations of an ancient room that had existed on the site of the DAR building long before the structure itself had been built. I looked down the stairs, but all I could see were rough outlines, shapes in the dark. It didn't look like a library. It looked like what it probably was, what it had always been, a crypt. At the bottom of the stairs, in the shadows of the crypt, countless tiny domes curved overhead where the columns jutted up into the vaulted ceiling, 40 or 50 in all. As my eyes adjusted to the dark, I could see that each column was different, and some of them were tilted like crooked old oaks. Their shadows made the circular chamber seem like some kind of quiet, dark forest. It was a terrifying room to be in. There was no way of knowing how far back it went, since every direction dissolved into darkness. Marion inserted her key into the first column, marked with a moon. The torches along the walls lit themselves, illuminating the room with flickering light.
"They're beautiful," Lena breathed. I could see her hair still twisting and wondered how this place must feel to her in ways I could never know.
"Alive, powerful, like the truth. Every truth is here, somewhere.
Collected from all over the world, long before my time. Istanbul," Marion pointed to the tops of the columns, the decorated parts, the capitals. "Taken from Babylon." She pointed to another one, with 4 hawk heads poking out from each side. "Egypt, the Eye of God." She patted another, dramatically carved with a lion's head. "Assyria." I felt along the wall with my hand. Even the stones of the walls were carved. Some were cut with faces of men, creatures, birds, staring from between the forest of columns like predators. Other stones were carved with symbols I didn't recognize, hieroglyphs of castors and cultures I'd never know. We moved farther into the chamber, out of the crypt, which seemed to serve as some sort of lobby, and again torches burst into flame, one after another, as if they were following us. I could see that the columns curved around a stone table in the middle of the room. The stacks, or what I guessed were the stacks, radiated out from the central circle like the spokes of a wheel and seemed to rise up almost to the ceiling, creating a frightening maze I imagined a mortal could get lost in. In the room itself, there was nothing but the columns and the circular stone table. Marion calmly picked up a torch from an iron crescent on the wall and handed it to me. She handed another to Lena and took one for herself. "Have a look around. I have to check the mail. I may have a transfer request from another branch."
"For the Lunae Libri?"
I hadn't considered that there might be other Castor libraries.
"Of course."
Marion turned back toward the stairs.
"Wait, how do you get mail here?"
"The same way you do. Carlton Eaton delivers it, rain or shine." Carlton Eaton was in the know. Of course he was. That probably explained why he'd picked Amma up in the middle of the night. I wondered if he opened the Castor's mail, too. I wondered what else I didn't know about Gatlin and the people in it. I didn't have to ask. "There aren't too many of us, but more than you'd think. You have to remember, Ravenwood has been here longer than this old building. This was a Castor county before it was ever a mortal one."
"Maybe that's why you're all so weird around here," Lena poked me. I was still stuck back on Carlton Eaton.
Who else knew what was really going on in Gatlin, in the other Gatlin, the one with magical underground libraries and girls who could control the weather or make you jump off a cliff? Who else was in the Castor loop, like Marion and Carlton Eaton, like my mom?
"Fatty? Mrs. English? Mr. Lee?" "Definitely not Mr. Lee."
"Don't worry. When you need them, they'll find you. That's how it works, how it always has."
"Wait,
I grabbed Marion's arm. Does my dad know? No. At least there was one person in my house who wasn't living a double life, even if he was crazy. Marion issued a final piece of advice. Now, you'd better get started. The Lunai Library is thousands of times bigger than any library you've ever seen. If you get lost, immediately trace your steps backward. That's why the stacks radiate out from this one chamber. If you only go forward or back, you have less chance of getting lost. How can you get lost if you can only go in a straight line? Try it for yourself. You'll see. Lena interrupted. What's at the end of the stacks? I mean, at the end of the aisles? Marion looked at her oddly. Nobody knows. No one has ever made it far enough to find out. Some of the aisles turn into tunnels. Parts of the Lunai Library are still uncharted. There are many things down here even I've never seen. One day, perhaps. What are you talking about? Everything ends somewhere. There can't be rows and rows of books tunneling under the whole town. What, do you come up for tea at Mrs. Lincoln's house, make a left turn and drop a book off to Aunt Dell in the next town, tunnel to the right for a chat with Amma? I was skeptical. Marion smiled at me, amused. How do you think Macon gets his books? How do you think the D.A.R. never sees any visitors going in or out? Gatlin is Gatlin. Folks like it fine the way it is, the way they think it is. Mortals only see what they want to see. There's been a thriving caster community in and around this county since before the Civil War. That's hundreds of years, Ethan, and that's not going to change suddenly. Not just because you know about it. I can't believe Uncle Macon never told me about this place. Think of all the casters that have come through here. Lena held up her torch, pulling a bound volume from the shelf. The book was ornately bound, heavy in her hands, and sent a cloud of gray dust exploding out in every direction. I started to cough. Casting, a brief history. She drew out another. We're in the seas, I guess. This one was a leather box that opened on top to reveal the standing scroll inside. Lena pulled out the scroll. Even the dust looked older and grayer. Casting to create and confound. That's an old one. Careful. More than a few hundred years. Gutenberg didn't invent the printing press until 1455. Marion took the scroll out of her hand gingerly, as if she was handling a newborn baby. Lena pulled out another book, bound in gray leather. Casting the Confederacy. Were there casters in the war? Marion nodded. Both sides, the blue and the gray. It was one of the great divisions in the caster community, I'm afraid, just as it was for us mortals. Lena looked up at Marion, shoving the dusty book back on the shelf. The casters in our family, we're still in a war, aren't we? Marion looked at her sadly. A house divided. That's what President Lincoln called it. And yes, Lena, I'm afraid you are. She touched Lena's cheek. Which is why you're here, if you recall, to find what you need to make sense of something senseless. Now, you'd better get started. There are so many books, Marion. Can't you just point us in the right direction? Don't look at me. Like I said, I don't have the answers, just the books. Get going. We're on the lunar clock down here, and you may lose track of time. Things aren't exactly as they seem when you're down below. I looked from Lena to Marion. I was afraid to let either one of them out of my sight. The Lunai Library was more intimidating than I had imagined, less like a library and more like, well, catacombs. And the Book of Moons could be anywhere. Lena and I faced the endless stacks, but neither one of us took even a single step. How are we going to find it? There must be a million books in here. I have no idea. Maybe. I knew what she was thinking. Should we try the locket? Do you have it? I nodded and pulled the warm lump out of my jeans pocket. I handed Lena the torch.
We need to see what happens. There has to be something else.
I unwrapped the locket and placed it on the round stone table in the center of the room. I saw a familiar look in Marion's eyes, the look she and my mother shared when they dug up a particularly good find.
Do you want to see this?
More than you know.
Marion slowly took my hand, and I took Lena's. I reached over with my fingers intertwined with Lena's and touched the locket. A blinding flash forced my eyes shut, and then I could see the smoke and smell the fire, and we were gone.
Genevieve lifted the book so she could read the words through the rain. She knew speaking the words would defy the natural laws. She could almost hear her mother's voice willing her to stop, to think about the choice she was making. But Genevieve couldn't stop. She couldn't lose Ethan. She began to chant.
Cruor pectoris mei, tutela tua est. Vita, vitae, mei. Corypiens tuam, corypiens meam. Corpus, corporis mei, medulla mensque. Anima, animae mei. Animam nostrum connecte. Cruor pectoris mei, luna mea, istus meus. Cruor pectoris mei, fatum meum, mea salus. Stop, child, for it's too late.
Avi's voice was frantic. The rain poured down and lightning sliced through the smoke. Genevieve held her breath and waited. Nothing. She must have done it wrong. She squinted to read the words more clearly in the dark. She screamed them into the darkness in the language she knew best.
Blood of my heart, protection is thine. Life of my life, taken yours, taken mine. Body of my body, marrow and mind. Soul of my soul, to our spirit bind. Blood of my heart, my tides, my moon. Blood of my heart, my salvation, my doom.
She thought her eyes were playing tricks on her when she saw Ethan's eyelids struggling to open.
Ethan!
For a split second, their eyes met. Ethan fought for breath, clearly trying to speak. Genevieve pressed her ear closer to his lips, and she could feel his warm breath on her cheek.
I never believed your daddy when he said it was impossible for a caster and a mortal to be together. We would have found a way. I love you, Genevieve.
He pressed something into her hand, a locket. And as suddenly as his eyes opened, they closed again, his chest failing to rise and fall. Before Genevieve could react, a jolt of electricity surged through her body. She could feel the blood pulsing through her veins. She must have been struck by lightning. The waves of pain crashed down on her. Genevieve tried to hold on. Then everything went black.
Sweet God in heaven, don't take her too.
Genevieve recognized Ivy's voice. Where was she? The smell brought her back. Burnt lemons. She tried to speak, but her throat felt like she had swallowed sand. Her eyes fluttered.
Oh, Lord, thank you.
Ivy was staring down at her, kneeling beside her in the dirt. Genevieve coughed and reached for Ivy, trying to pull her closer.
Ethan, is he?
She whispered.
I'm sorry, child. He's gone.
Genevieve struggled to open her eyes. Ivy jumped back as if she'd seen the devil himself.
Lord have mercy!
What? What's wrong, Ivy? The old woman struggled to make sense of what she saw.
Your eyes, child. They've changed. What are you talking about? They ain't green no more. They're yellow as the sun.
Genevieve didn't care what color her eyes were.
She didn't care about anything now that she'd lost Ethan. She started to sob. The rain picked up, turning the ground under them to mud.
You got to get up, Miss Genevieve. We have to commune with the ones in the other world.
Ivy tried to pull her to her feet.
Ivy, you're not making sense. Your eyes, I warned you. I told you about that moon, no moon. We have to find out what it means. We have to consult the spirits. If there's something wrong with my eyes, I'm sure it was because I was struck by lightning.
What did you see?
Ivy looked panicked.
Ivy, what's going on? Why are you acting so strange?
You weren't struck by lightning. It was something else.
Ivy ran back toward the burning cotton fields. Genevieve called after her, trying to get up, but she was still reeling. She leaned her head back in the thick mud, rain falling steadily on her face. Rain mixed with the tears of defeat. She drifted in and out of the moment, in and out of consciousness. She heard Ivy's voice, faint in the distance, calling her name. When her eyes focused again, the old woman was next to her, her skirt gathered in her hands. Ivy was carrying something in the folds of her skirt, and she dumped it out on the wet ground next to Genevieve. Tiny vials of powder and bottles of what looked like sand and dirt knocked against each other.
What are you doing?
Making an offering to the spirits. They're the only ones who can tell us what this means.
Ivy, calm down. You're talking gibberish.
The old woman pulled something from the pocket of her house dress. It was a shard of mirror. She thrust it in front of Genevieve. It was dark, but there was no mistaking it. Genevieve's eyes were blazing. They had turned from deep green to a fiery gold, and they didn't look like her eyes in another unmistakable way. In the center, where a round black pupil should have been, there were almond-shaped slits, like the pupils of a cat. Genevieve threw the mirror to the ground and turned to Ivy. But the old woman wasn't paying attention. She had already mixed the powders and the earth, and she was sifting them from hand to hand, whispering in the old Gullah language of her ancestors.
Ivy, what are you...
Shh! The old woman hissed. I'm listening to the spirits. They know what you've done. They're gonna tell us what this means. From the earth are her bones and the blood of my blood.
Ivy pricked her finger with the edge of the broken mirror and smeared the tiny drops of blood into the earth she was sifting.
Let me hear what you hear. See what you see. Know what you know.
Ivy stood up, arms open to the heavens. The rain poured down upon her, the dirt running down her dress in streaks. She began to speak again in the strange language, and then...
It can't be. She didn't know no better.
She wailed at the dark sky above.
Ivy, what is it?
Ivy was shaking, hugging herself and moaning.
It can't be. It can't be.
Genevieve grabbed Ivy by her shoulders.
What? What is it? What's wrong with me? I told you not to mess with that book. I told you it was the wrong kind of night for casting, but it's too late now, child. There's no way to take it back.
What are you talking about?
You're cursed now, Miss Genevieve. You've been claimed. You've turned, and there's nothing we can do to stop it. A bargain. You can't get nothing from the Book of Moons without giving something in return.
What? What did I give?
Your fate, child. Your fate, and the fate of every other Duquesne child that's born after you.
Genevieve didn't understand, but she understood enough to know that what she had done couldn't be undone.
What do you mean?
On the 16th moon, the 16th year, the book will take what it's been promised. What you bargained, the blood of a Duquesne child, and that child will go dark.
Every Duquesne child?
Ivy bowed her head. Genevieve wasn't the only one who was defeated on this night.
Not everyone.
Genevieve looked hopeful.
Which ones? How will we know which ones?
The book will choose. On the 16th moon, the child's 16th birthday.
It didn't work. Lena's voice sounded strangled, far away. All I could see was smoke, and all I could hear was her voice. We weren't in the library, and we weren't in the vision. We were somewhere in between, and it was awful. Lena? And then, for a moment, I saw her face in the smoke. Her eyes were huge and dark, only now, the green looked almost black. Her voice was now more like a whisper.
2 seconds. He was alive for 2 seconds, and then she lost him.
She closed her eyes and disappeared.
El? Where are you?
Ethan, the locket.
I could hear Marion as if from a great distance. I could feel the hardness of the locket in my hands. I understood. I dropped it. I opened my eyes, coughing from the smoke still in my lungs. The room was swirling, blurry.
What the hell are you children doing here?
I fixed my eyes on the locket, and the room came back into focus. It lay on the stone floor, looking small and harmless. Marion dropped my hand. Macon Ravenwood stood in the middle of the crypt, his overcoat twisting around him. Amma was standing next to him, her good coat buttoned on the wrong buttons, clutching her pocketbook. I don't know who was angrier.
I'm sorry, Macon. You know the rules. They asked for help, and I am bound to give it.
Marion looked stricken. Amma was all over Marion, like she had doused our house in gasoline.
The way I see it, you're bound to take care of Lila's boy and Macon's niece, and I don't see how what you are doing does either.
I waited for Macon to lay into Marion too, but he didn't say a word. Then I realized why. He was shaking Lena. She had collapsed across the stone table in the center of the room. Her arms were spread wide, her face down against the rough stone. She didn't look conscious.
Lena?
I pulled her into my arms, ignoring Macon, who was already next to her. Her eyes were still black, staring up at me.
She's not dead. She's drifting. I believe I can reach her.
Macon was working quietly. I could see him twisting his ring. His eyes were strangely alight.
Lena? Come back!
I pulled her limp body into my arms, leaning her against my chest. Macon was mumbling. I couldn't make out the words, but I could see Lena's hair begin to stir in the now familiar, supernatural wind I'd come to think of as a casting breeze.
Not here, Macon. Your casting won't work here.
Marion was tearing through the pages of a dusty book, her voice unsteady.
He's not casting, Marion. He's traveling. Even a caster can't do that. Where she's gone, only Macon's kind can go. Under.
Amma was trying to be reassuring, but she wasn't very convincing. I felt the cold settling over Lena's empty body and knew Amma was right. Wherever Lena was, it wasn't in my arms. She was far away. I could feel it myself, and I was just a mortal.
I told you, Macon, this is a neutral place. There is no binding you can work in a room of earth.
Marion was pacing, clutching the book as if it made her feel like she was helping in some way. But there were no answers inside. She had said it herself. Casting couldn't help us here. I remembered the dreams, remembered pulling Lena through the mud. I wondered if this was the place where I lost her. Macon spoke. His eyes were open, but he wasn't seeing. It was like they were turned inward to wherever Lena was.
Lena, listen to me. She can't hold you.
She. I stared into Lena's empty eyes. Seraphine.
You're strong, Lena. Break through. She knows I can't help you here. She was waiting for you in the shadows. You have to do this yourself.
Marion appeared with a glass of water. Macon poured it onto Lena's face, into her mouth, but she didn't move. I couldn't stand it anymore. I grabbed her mouth and kissed her, hard. The water dribbled out of our mouths like I was giving mouth-to-mouth to a drowning victim.
Wake up, Elle. You can't leave me now. Not like this. I need you more than she does.
Lena's eyelids fluttered.
Ethan, I'm tired.
She sputtered back to life, choking, spitting water across her jacket. I smiled in spite of everything, and she smiled back at me. If this was what the dreams were about, we had changed the way they ended. This time, I had held on. But in the back of my mind, I think I knew. This wasn't the moment when she slipped out of my arms. It was only the beginning. Even if that was true, I had saved her, this time. I reached down to pull her into my arms. I wanted to feel the familiar current between us. Before I could wrap my arms around her, she jerked up and out of my arms.
Uncle Macon!
Macon stood across the room, propped against the crypt wall, barely able to support his own weight. He leaned his head back against the stone. He was sweating, breathing heavily, and his face was chalk white. Lena ran and clung to him, a child worried for her father.
You shouldn't have done that. She could have killed you.
Whatever he was doing when he was traveling, whatever that meant, the effort had cost him. So this was Seraphine. This thing, whoever she was Lena's mother. If this was a trip to the library, I didn't know if I was ready for what might happen in the next few months. Or, as of tomorrow morning, 74 days. Lena sat, still dripping wet, wrapped in a blanket. She looked about 5 years old. I glanced at the old oaken door behind her, wondering if I could ever find my way out alone. Unlikely. We'd gone about 30 paces down one of the aisles, and then disappeared down a stairwell, through a series of small doors, into a cozy study that was apparently some sort of reading room. The passageway had seemed endless, with a door every few feet like some sort of underground hotel. The moment Macon sat down, a silver tea service appeared in the center of the table, with exactly 5 cups and a platter of sweetbreads. Maybe kitchen was here, too. I looked around. I had no idea where I was, but I knew one thing. I was somewhere in Gatlin, yet somewhere further away from Gatlin than I'd ever been. Either way, I was out of my league. I tried to find a comfortable spot in an upholstered chair that looked like it could have belonged to Henry VIII. Actually, there was no way of knowing that it hadn't. The tapestry on the wall also looked as if it had come from an old castle, or Ravenwood. It was woven into the shape of a constellation, midnight blue and silver thread. Every time I looked at it, the moon appeared in a different stage. Macon, Marion, and Amma sat across the table. Saying Lena and I were in trouble was putting the best possible spin on it. Macon was furious, his teacup rattling in front of him. Amma was beyond that.
What makes you think you can take it upon yourself to decide when my boy is ready for the underground? Lila would skin you herself if she was here. You got some nerve, Marion Ashcroft.
Marion's hands were shaking as she lifted her teacup.
Your boy? What about my niece? Since I believe she was the one who was attacked.
Macon and Amma, having ripped us to shreds, were starting in on each other. I didn't dare look at Lena.
You been trouble since the day you were born, Macon.
Amma turned to Lena.
But I can't believe you would drag my boy into this, Lena Duquesne.
Lena lost it.
Of course I dragged him into this. I do bad things. When are you going to understand that? And it's only going to get worse.
The tea set flew off the table and into the air where it froze. Macon looked at it without so much as blinking. A challenge.
The entire set righted itself and landed gently back on the table. Lena looked at Macon as if there were no one else in the room.
I'm going to go dark, and there's nothing you can do to stop it.
That's not true.
Isn't it? I'm going to end up just like my...
She couldn't say it. The blanket fell from her shoulders, and she took my hand.
You have to get away from me, Ethan, before it's too late.
Macon looked at her, irritated.
You're not going to go dark. Don't be so gullible. She only wants you to think that.
The way he said she reminded me of the way he said Gatlin. Marion put her teacup down on the table. Teenagers, everything is so apocalyptic. Amma shook her head.
Some things are meant to be, and some take some doing. This one isn't done just yet.
I could feel Lena's hand shaking in mine.
They're right, El. Everything's going to be okay.
She yanked her hand away.
Everything's going to be okay? My mother, a cataclyst, is trying to kill me. A vision from 100 years ago just clarified that my whole family has been cursed since the Civil War. My 16th birthday is in 2 months, and that's the best you can do?
I took her hand again, gently, because she let me.
I saw the same vision you did. The book chooses who it takes. Maybe it won't choose you.
I was clutching at straws, but they were all I had. Amma looked at Marion, slamming her saucer on the table. The cup rattled against it.
The book?
Macon's eyes drilled down on me. I tried to look him in the eye, but I couldn't do it.
The book in the vision.
Don't say another word, Ethan. We should tell them. We can't do this alone.
It's nothing, Uncle M. We don't even know what the visions mean.
Lena wasn't going to give in, but after tonight, I felt like I had to. We had to. Everything was spiraling out of control. I felt like I was drowning, and I couldn't even save myself, let alone Lena.
Maybe the visions mean not everyone in your family goes dark when they're claimed. What about Aunt Del? Reese? Think cute little Ryan is going to the dark side when she could heal people?
I said, moving closer to her. Lena shrank back into her chair.
You don't know anything about my family.
But he's not wrong, Lena.
Macon looked at her, exasperated.
You're not Ridley, and you're not your mother, I said, as convincingly as I could.
How do you know? You've never even met my mother, and by the way, neither have I, except in psychic attacks that no one can seem to prevent.
Macon tried to sound reassuring.
We were unprepared for these sorts of attacks. I didn't know she could travel. I didn't know she shared some of my powers. It is not a